Welcome to... Hey, Great Shot. This is the Great Shot Podcast, a Cracked Rackets and Tennis Channel Podcast Network production. My name is Alex Gruskin. Busy times if you're a fan of the tennis world right now. The Australian Open officially coming to a close. So much action unfolding over these past 2 weeks down under. Of course, we are fresh off of the men's and women's Division I National Indoors. If you are a college tennis fan and maybe you thought with those two events in the books we'd have a bit of a lull this past weekend, no, that was not the case. We had a fantastic weekend of college tennis that unfolded, and joining me to recap it all and to offer our updated top 10 college tennis rankings are the two other members of our Cracked Rackets Holy Trinity covering college tennis. Let's start where we always start. You know him as the former four-star recruit on tennisrecruiting.net, your favorite writer for our website, crackedrackets.com. I know him as the other half of Baylor Nick Stachowiak, and affectionately as Matt the Crack Stachowiak. Matty, hey, Great Shot as always. How are you doing?
Doing good, man. And I agree with your statement there that we're not slowing down anytime soon, right? After National Indoors, we're just getting conference play kicked off now. So this is when the real fun stuff begins. I think here over the next, 2 months, obviously all of March and April, we're just going to have matches, a ton of matches every single weekend. And then obviously postseason play in May. So we're ramping up, man. No slowdown here.
6 months of not knowing if we were going to have a college tennis season, that is music to the ears of all college tennis fans. Quickly, before we introduce the third member of the Holy Trinity, Djokovic, Osaka, Australian Open champions. You are a man who likes a favorite. Those are your two favorites entering the event. Your thoughts on how it all ended?
Yeah, those were obviously my picks. Jamie McDonald and I, or should I say Gilles Simon, and I did our preview pod. And of course, I picked Novak for the men and Osaka for the women. That's how it went down. No surprise there. And you know what, Gruskin? I mean, I'm picking the favorites, but look who won, right? My picks are correct. So, I'd rather be right than just, go for some random, out of the blue picks. No, I made some interesting picks in there, but Novak was fantastic in that final. I think by far he played his best match against Medvedev. He was way too good. I mean, Medvedev just had no answers, and it's not like, Medvedev just really played all that poorly, but Novak was phenomenal, and Naomi Osaka is just the best player in women's tennis right now. I think that's just a clear fact, specifically on hard courts. I'm very interested to see what she looks like on the clay and on the grass when we play Wimbledon, but right now, man, on hard courts, Osaka is the player
Osaka's
to beat.
Osaka's played
for sure.
Fewer than 100 matches in her career on clay. She's played fewer than 40 on grass, so you're right. I still think we have a healthy amount of sample size to see with Naomi Osaka on those surfaces. To your larger point, I agree. You be correct, I'll be interesting. It's why we're a good duo, always. I was shocked that it's just funny because as the match is on, a couple days removed, I just can't believe Medvedev didn't have a weapon to hurt Djokovic with. That's what I'm starting to realize, is Medvedev takes away what you want to do the most on the court, right? For Rublev, for Tsitsipas, he didn't give them a single clean look at a forehand, but that game plan doesn't work against Novak Djokovic because you think, okay, what am I going to take away for Novak? And it's like, well, it doesn't really matter because he's kind of good at everything. And it was just fascinating to see that dynamic unfold. But nevertheless, that's enough pro tennis talk. Unless the third member of our college tennis Holy Trinity has any thoughts he would like to add in. You know him as the forefather of the college tennis ranks formula. Predictions never far from the listed UTR. One of the many dames to root for the Liberty Flames. And I forgot to say that line in our last podcast. So just to emphasize again, this man is a slappy for the Liberty Flames. Of course, you also know him as the professor, the snitch, the one-shoulder designer. He quotes Henry Ford. It's Chris Halioris. Chris, hey, Great Shot as always. Any final thoughts on Australia?
I mean, you went through all of that and didn't even mention that you could have tied them together and we had a college player in the final.
Very, very true. Jennifer Brady, shout out to you, UCLA's finest. I posted this tweet as well on that 2014-15 team. Her team, in which she played three singles on, didn't win the national title. I mean, that's just freaking nuts. It speaks to the level we've seen in college tennis over these past 10 years. It also speaks to the development of Jennifer Brady, who has gotten a lot better since her college tennis days. But no, with that in mind, of course, let's talk a little bit about what's gone on in the college tennis world. And we actually want to start with some non-result-oriented news. But a significant piece of the postseason storyline now coming together, because all of us as college tennis fans, or at least I will speak for myself, I kind of liked the round of 16 format. I kind of like that additional home match for those top eight seeds, the drama that came with it. We remember when TCU went down to Starkville, knocked off Chris's Mississippi State Bulldogs. We saw UNC do it to USC back in 2019 as well. And, you know, obviously all of us were wondering, well, does it make sense to have these teams travel an additional time given we're amidst a pandemic? And the answer, as according to the Division I Competition Oversight Committee, is no. As we learned that the Division I, and I'm going to read the statement here, Division I Competition Oversight Committee approved moving the 2021 Super Regional Round, also known as the Round of 16, to the final site in Orlando, Florida, rather than conducting Super Regional competition at on-campus sites. This change will provide a more effective and efficient competition as it relates to health and safety, given the increased restrictions in testing and gathering protocols. The COC further approved starting the team quarterfinals at final site one day earlier, at the final site one day earlier, excuse me, to accommodate television coverage for team competition. In turn, the individual tournament will also start a day earlier. The new 2021 schedule is outlined below. Sunday, May 16th, is when the women's super team regionals will get underway. Monday the 17th will be the men's round of 16. There will be a day off in between that and the start of the women's quarterfinals, and then another day off before. So the men get 2 days off in between the round of 16 and the quarterfinals. Women get 2 days off between their round of 16 and the quarterfinals. Then the semifinals, 21st, 22nd, 23rd. Anyways, I suppose those dates may not have been necessary, but if you're someone like me who's going to book your calendar in advance, that's nice to know. I'm going to start with you, Matt. Maddie, because when we were talking about, you know, running through our outline before the podcast begins, and literally we did it right before the podcast began, I said, oh, and the super regional news about it all going to one site. And all you said in response was, ooh. So I'm curious, what was the connotation of that ooh?
Yeah, no, I like it, Gruskin. I mean, to have 16 teams all in the same spot, I like it. The more, the better. That's the way that I view it. And you're right. I mean, when you get one of those top eight seeds at the Super Regionals and you get to host that extra round of 16 match, yeah, that's nice. I mean, that's a little bonus for earning that top eight ranking. I get that. And I'm okay with that too. But especially this year where you're going to minimize the travel and just make things easier, I just think it's going to be a blast to have all top 16 men's and women's teams in the same venue playing these matches. I can't wait to be there. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to be there for sure. It's just going to be a blast. I mean, you guys remember when we first all met up back 2018 in Winston-Salem at Wake Forest, we had 16 teams there and it was fantastic. The more the better for me. The more tennis that I can watch all of these teams in the same venue, I really like that. And especially with the pandemic and everything going on, I think it was a good call and I'm totally
Chris,
good with the move.
Any thoughts on in terms of, I mean, look, I hate to speculate because respectfully, I don't think I'm qualified to do it, but the idea of having 32 teams in one location instead of 16, just from a COVID standpoint, not the best idea, although knowing the ITA, the NCAA, as I do, they will split the teams up between hotels. They will ensure all safety and health protocols are followed. But just in general, from a competitive aspect, the idea of getting everyone back on one site, your reaction, Chris?
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I
do
like
love
having
it, too.
Them all together.
I like it both ways. That's my problem. But sorry, go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, if you're going to go, if you wanted to go watch, right, you get to see anybody you want to see because they're all there and you can pick your time slot, even if you don't want to hit all four time slots during the day on that first day. Right. And you can go catch anybody you want to catch. So I love it from that perspective. I do think it's going to be, my fear is that obviously the safety of, you know, players and staff and everybody involved comes first. And when you get that many teams together, it's going to be really hard to allow any number of fans at all. You know, even though the NCAA is moving into allowing you know, like 25% levels of attendance at a lot of events, that'll be tough just because you got 32 teams worth of players hanging around. Now you got to make sure, you certainly have to make sure you keep them away from any of the fan, you know, totally separate areas from where any fans could actually be. So that'll be tough, but hopefully they'll manage to get it done.
Yeah, and let's be clear. The national campus is gigantic. It's an airport, but it's gigantic. And they will have the hard court outdoor courts, I'm sure, crossed off for the men's teams to go practice. And I'm sure there will be a rule in place where no more than two teams at the facility at once so that they can get them practicing. They have to leave. And only once those teams are done leaving can the next team come on site. And there will be cleaning of the courts. And they will have everything in place. There's no doubt about that. From a fan's perspective, I kind of like quarterfinals because it means there's four matches in a day and you only have to watch one at a time. And the round of 16 at the National Indoors that first day is fantastic because you have two matches on your screen at all times and there really is so much action. At the same time, I kind of get spoiled by the idea of watching one match at a time. That being said, this is what needs to happen to have the NCAA tournament be a go. It's not even a question. Make the decision. Do it. That's what they did. Shout out to the ITA for thinking long term, for ensuring we're going to have an NCAA tournament, which it really does feel like we are. I don't know, Chris, you look like you might have one final thought.
Well, I was going to say, I'm going to guess that neither one of you actually read the report from the meeting. So I'll throw the trivia question out there because I'm sure the listeners want to know. How much money are they saving? And what I really want to know is how, but logistically, we can figure that out, I'm sure. How much money are they saving in COVID testing by having everyone at one site?
Yeah, I didn't read that report.
I should have read that report. I didn't. This is why we have you, Professor. Oh, God, he's calling us out on not doing the reading, Matt. He's really gone full professor mode.
He really has. That is a very professor thing to do.
That's a bold move.
I have no idea, Chris. Is it something ridiculous?
It's going to be five figures. It's going to be five figures because getting all these teams on site one additional time is a complete another round of testing. And by the way, I think Corey Brooks released the testing protocol for what it's going to have to be in, you know, in terms of the testing arrival required before. You have to have the negative antigen test within one day. You're going to get tested upon arrival, quarantine until confirmed negative, then testing every other day while participating on site, which is what you need to do. All of this was me, by the way, obfuscating Chris so I could, you know, buy some time. I'm going to say they saved $25,000.
So the answer is $64,000.
Good for them. Lock that cash in.
But I saw the same thing you did, and I thought, wow, they're still doing all of those tests. Yeah. So I don't know if it's all in sending them off or if they were actually going to do more tests if everyone was distributed. I don't know. But it said they were going to save $64,000 in testing and another $14,000 in host expenses. But the 14 was lost by the fact that they were going to have to pay about $13,000 in per diem back. So. But the $64K in COVID testing savings is a good deal.
Yeah. Hey, all I'm thinking there is that's more money for us at Cracked Rackets to go do things. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry. I shouldn't have made that joke. I'm sorry to anyone who hears that. That was a joke. It was a joke. Anyways, with that in mind, that was storyline number one. Storyline number two. It's a smaller storyline, but it was a storyline. Here's how I view these storylines, by the way, for you listeners at home, because, you know, we're doing a lot of broadcasting. We're following a lot of things at Cracked Rackets. Whenever Matt and Chris have exchanged texts on a topic and that text number exceeds five, I always think, all right, I got to go back and read what they just said because this is relevant and we're going to have to talk about it on the podcast. We do have to talk about what's happening at Notre Dame right now because Coach Ryan Satchery has built a really strong program for the Fighting Irish over these past couple of seasons. I remember a round of 32 match they played against Michigan. I want to say that was 2018. That was the team Michigan beat to clinch. And then they played this really fun 4-3 indoor match the next year early in the season. But he's had a lot of really good players come through there over the past few years. You know, Quentin Monahan, Alex Lawson, Greg Andrews, Eddie Kowalski, a lot of really good guys, a lot of solid college players. And, you know, they recently, I believe, joined the ACC in tennis. I might be wrong about that, Manny. I think I'm correct.
Well, they have, but it's been, yeah. I mean, yeah. A little bit of time.
No, and it's been a little bit rocky for them early in their ACC times. But still, you look at the talent he had on the roster, and you think with Richard Ciamara, Tristan McCormick, all of these guys they're bringing in as well, Axel Neve, that Notre Dame was going to be rocking and rolling. Well, we have learned over the past few days that a couple of people are not going to be rocking and rolling with the Fighting Irish anymore. And some of them are older players who, you know, just by byproduct of having that extra year of eligibility, are thinking about their long-term future. But we learned over the past few weeks that Richard Ciamara is going to be transferring to Texas. And Chris and I actually had the chance to ask Texas head coach Bruce Burke about that very topic when he came on the Cracked Interviews podcast. But we also learned today that Tristan McCormick, who has not been playing much for the Irish, is going to be going to Georgia next season to continue his college tennis career. And those are two of the top three players for the Fighting Irish over these past couple of seasons. I want to start with you, Maddie. You're our ACC correspondent. Your thoughts on what's going on there?
Yeah, you know, it's tough for me to really say, because I don't want to speculate too much, but they are struggling this year. They really are. And I think we all expected Notre Dame to be a little bit better. Just again, with their personnel, with their roster, their coaching, that's a team that we expect to, you know, push all of the ACC teams, really. You know, if they don't win, they can at least provide a good, tough match for almost everybody in the ACC. And this year's just been just really, really bizarre almost. They've struggled, and guys like Ciamara and McCormick, you know, obviously that's a huge hit for them next year to lose those guys. You know, now we don't know what's going to happen to Axel, and he's still there and he's got some eligibility remaining. So, you know, it's not looking good for the Irish. And I don't know what's going on there. Like, I wish I knew somebody that was like internal within that program, because I could probably find out a little bit more. But I don't know what it is. But clearly things seem to be going a little bit south. And obviously, you know, with only 1 year left, both Ciamara and McCormick wanted to take advantage of their opportunity. You know, my brother Nick did the same thing. You know, he left Duke and is now at Baylor and really enjoying his time there. So for Richard Ciamara, Texas, you know, we've talked about them a lot this year. He's going to be an important piece, you know, for a young Texas squad. He can bring a veteran presence and play, you know, top three, four in their lineup. That's a major component. And for a guy like McCormick going to Georgia, big guy, can play great doubles, has been ranked very, very highly in the country in doubles. And in singles, he can play where you need him. I'm assuming at Georgia, it would probably be a little bit lower in the lineup. But hey, if you have to play that guy at five or six, no problem. That's a great option to have. So two big pieces that are going to be leaving the Irish.
Chris?
Yeah, it's tough. Look, I'm with Maddie. I don't know. I have a really good relationship with Coach Sashire, and I will eventually, you know, reach out and ask him, but it's kind of like, you know, somebody loses a match and 5 minutes later you're texting them like, hey, what happened? You know, you don't want to do that. So, Satch knows that I love him. I love what he's doing there. I love his program. I love his coaching. So, you know, it's all good. I'm not trying to cast any aspersions on the program. It could very well be, just because I don't know, that, you know, those guys are seniors and it's a deal where it's not a money thing, because this was the year that everybody was free and the school got to pay for it. But from next year on, they count against the scholarship limit. And it may very well be that they had already had commitments to some guys that were coming in as recruits that they didn't want to have to go back on and keep themselves under the 4.5 scholarship limit, right? That could be. So it could have been all along, hey, the seniors aren't coming back, and they were just trying to figure out where they're going. I don't really know. So, you know, before I speculate too far on it, I'll reach out to Satch and figure out, you know, what kind of, how much he wants to say. Let me know what's going on. But yeah, it's unfortunate. It's great for Georgia and Texas, because those are two really good guys, right? And like Maddie said, they are both seniors. So not totally out of the question that you're going to see, you know, a lot of seniors leaving. It just so happened that we saw news of two in the same week from the same school. So when that happens, obviously we're going to report it.
No, that's exactly the takeaway, is that this is going to be happening to a lot of programs. Notre Dame's just the first, or not really the first. Well, I would argue Duke was the first, and now Notre Dame is another one where you see this happening. And look, according to Tennis Recruiting, Notre Dame has 3 5-star recruits committed for next season, so they'll be just fine. That's the broader takeaway if you're the Notre Dame team. But the other big takeaway is that expect to see this a lot as money opens up for some schools, not others. These seniors are looking for graduate programs, ways to use their extra year of eligibility. As Maddie pointed out, you know, Nick, Spencer, Charlie, they're the first. They're certainly not going to be the last. But yeah, again, just thought we would comment on that because that is going to be something we will talk about throughout the course of the spring. With that in mind, let's run through some of the matches we saw happen this weekend. And we're not going to do the huge deep dive breakdowns that we do when it's a national indoors, a kickoff weekend, but I do want to talk about some of the notable results. And since we talked about Georgia last, let's talk about them first here, as they had one of the matches of the weekend. They took on Tennessee. Tennessee, I believe, going to Georgia and knocking off the Bulldogs 4-2. They take the doubles point wins from Walton and Harper, Walner and Hussey, and then they get victories at the number 4 position from Prada, 5 position from Wiedemann, and then the 2 position, Johannes Munday, clinching with a 6-love third set victory over Phil Henning. Now, for Georgia, a couple of things. They didn't have Tyler Zink. They did. I'm missing. There was one other player they didn't
Blake
have.
Blake Kreuter.
Blake Kreuter, thank you. They were also missing Blake Kreuter. With that in mind, it meant it was Billy Rowe playing 3, Gravilius 4, Anselmo 5, Britton Johnston 6. And yet they got the win from Johnston at 6. They got the win from Trent Bride at 1. Henning, Billy Rowe were both right there in their matches. Chris, you watched the most of this probably of the three of us. Again, is this more just a sign that Tennessee is this good? Obviously, the losses of Zink and Kreuter big for the Bulldogs, although we did see Kreuter in doubles. So if you want to share more about that, please do. But just your thoughts on this result.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's a tough one to make a lot out of because, first of all, I had already believed all along that Tennessee is this good. But if anything, I came out of this going, man, I was kind of hoping they'd, given that there was no Kreuter, no Zink for Georgia, you kind of thought they'd be a little more dominant. Georgia played and hung in very, very well. Kreuter played doubles. What I hear is back locked up on him, cramped up, something of the sort. I don't know if he's fighting an injury, but basically he played doubles and just couldn't go for singles after playing doubles. Something happened there. So that's why he was out. Zink wasn't even on site. Draw your own conclusions there. He'll be back. So no worries long-term for them. But yeah, I think it was encouraging for both teams, right? It's encouraging for Georgia that without two of those guys in their lineup, they managed to be right there. Like you said, I mean, Billy Rowe was actually looking good to make it 4-3. And Henning got to a third and just got blitzed by Munday 6-love in the third. But that was a very tight match given that they were down 2 guys. So I don't think it hurts them at all. I mean, obviously standings wise, yes, but from a morale standpoint, they know they're right there. And for Tennessee, they know, hey, you know, when our back's against the wall, again, they don't have Pat Harper in the lineup, who I really think should be in the lineup. I think that's, you know, hopefully as the season goes on, we'll be seeing some more of him. But I think it was good for both schools. And, you know, Georgia's got some matches this weekend. So we'll see. Hopefully, you know, they get their guys back. But that'll be the takeaway there. Is it, you know, a one weekend thing in their back or what?
Yeah, no, I mean, they were missing Zink from the doubles lineup, but Tennessee took it to them. And this Tennessee team now, you look at their overall record, I believe they're 12-1. They've dropped 1 doubles point on the season, and it was one they should have won against North Carolina at the National Indoors. And, you know, Walton at Harper at number 1 are really, really good. And Munday and Prada seem to get better and better. And just Johannes Munday just seems to get better with every college tennis match he plays. And then when you can have the luxury of Walner and Hussey at the number 3 position, this Tennessee team expects to go up 1-0 in every match they play. And then, you know, with Luka Wiedemann at 5, who delivers another another 1-4 victory. You expect, okay, him at 5, that's 2-0. We just got to find two more. And between Monday, Walton, you know, one of Hussey or Prada, they've got a lot of pathways to 4 points, Maddie. Again, it was a banged-up Georgia team, but you got to credit this Tennessee team for once again getting over the finish line. They just take care of business here again on the road, and this is they beat NC State on the road. They beat Georgia on the road now. It's time to just accept them as good.
Yeah, 100%, Gruskin. I mean, to go on the road at a place like Georgia and win like this under any circumstances, it's a very, very good result. And I grossly underestimated Tennessee coming into this season. I think we all did. We didn't have them in our top 10 list. You know, we just – I don't want to say we dismissed them, but at least in my eyes, guys, you'll remember, I mean, I was high on A&M. I thought they were going to win the SEC. I thought Florida and Georgia were going to be right behind there. And then I said, okay, Tennessee's pushing to, you know, get up there with Florida and Georgia. But man, I mean, this race for the SEC is going to be so much fun because I really don't know who's going to win. I mean, Georgia does have to get healthy. That's going to be super important for them. They have to be healthy, you know, and we have definitely not seen Florida play their best tennis this year. I think they're only going to get better, hopefully. But A&M has looked pretty good overall, and Tennessee has been fantastic. I didn't expect them to be quite this good. And like you mentioned, Gruskin, find all these different ways to get to 4 points. Johannes Mundy, for a freshman, this is a guy that's really exceeded my expectations. So that's kind of another factor here. But they always play good doubles. Historically, Tennessee's been very good at doubles. And like you said, all throughout their lineup, they have depth and they're a great team.
Well, I think the thing Chris was most proud of me for during the National Indoors was the way I got Mike to just start using the term match calculus and just make that part of the lexicon of college tennis. Is that fair to say, Chris?
Yeah. I mean, and you just kept pushing to try to use it sooner and sooner until you got to the point where you said, no, it's too early. Stop.
Exactly. Well, anyways, I like to divide these teams right now. I've decided the way to do it is by the match calculus. And it's, do you have paths to, you know, what are your ways to four? Are you a 4 point team? Are you a 3 point team? Are you a 2 point team? Are you a 1 point team? And, you know, there are 2 4 point teams, UNC and Baylor, because for UNC, it's doubles, it's Will, it's Brian, and then it's one of two or three. For Baylor, it's doubles, and honestly, it's 4 through 6. Like, let's just be honest here. That's their pathway to 4. And that these teams have more than that pathway to 4 is why they're in that elite category. I thought Tennessee was a 2-point team. What I didn't realize is they're a 3-point team because they've got doubles, they've got Wiedemann, and then Johannes Mundy is 7-3. Prada's 2-0 in the two times he's played there, but they're 10-2 at the two singles position. And, you know, they're also, I believe, 8-3 at the four singles position. And so, you know, they're a 3-point team. They're going to scrap their way to 3 points, in my opinion. Maddie, you have your finger up.
One thing I want to mention here, and we're going to be watching for this. Let's see how Mundy does against Habib from A&M and against Sam Riffis from Florida, right? Those are going to be two huge matches, and we've seen Habib and Riffis play those number two positions for Texas A&M and Florida, respectively. If Johannes Mundy can come out and put a point on the board against those schools, holy cow, then yeah, you're right. Let's see what happens there.
And you're absolutely correct, but what I'm meaning to say is I didn't think they would be this competitive this soon at that position, and they are.
Yeah.
And that's why they're a 3-point team. Professor, anything you'd like to add to that?
No, I mean, you hit it right on the head. I think we all kind of when you know you're coming into the year playing a freshman at 2 or 3 like Mundy, you just, you know, you're not sure what to expect, and it's very hard to be too overly optimistic. And he's basically, I mean, he's been almost a lock for them every time. So, I mean, that has really pushed them over the edge to make them, you know, a very, very, very good team.
The other big thing, we're indoors right now, and that certainly helps this team quite a bit. But again, it was a really good victory for Tennessee. They continue to assert themselves as a team you expect to make the quarterfinals, maybe even better than that now in terms of their ceiling here in 2021. Let's stick in the SEC now. Maddie, you mentioned the Florida Gators. They played one of the stranger matches of the weekend. Now, in the end, it was a 6-1 victory for the Gators over Alabama at home, but took a 7-6 victory from Riffis and Vale at number one to clinch that doubles point. And then you look across the board for the Gators. You know, it was a 7-6 first set at number two. It was a 7-6 first set for Alabama at number three. You had 7-6 second sets at positions 5, 6, and 3. Bama pushed Florida really tough, Chris. And I know, again, we were texting about it through the weekend. This time it was Ingledson, Shelton, and Greif for the Gators. But, you know, it's still Vale 1, Riffis 2, Andrade 3. After that, your guess is as good as mine, it feels like, for what the bottom half of this lineup's going to look like.
Yeah, we're going to see lots of combinations. But we at least saw for the first time as we entered SEC play both days, Lucas Greif in the lineup.
So, well, he doesn't lose in SEC play, as we all know.
He was in there for both matches over the weekend. You know, they pulled the, as you said, we saw Ingledson, Shelton, Greif, and then we saw Goodyear on the latter match of the weekend, and Bicknell actually got an extra match in when that one finished, kind of the seventh match on, if you will. But I think for Florida, both matches. This one was close. The Auburn match was even closer, even though it was another 6-1. I mean, that one, they had 4-3 setters. Here, I don't know, we didn't go nothing went three sets here, but they were lots and lots of tiebreakers. Right? I mean, 4 or 5 tiebreaks in this match that were played. So it was tight. And yeah, Bama pushed them, but they at least got it all done in straight sets and got out relatively unscathed. The Auburn match to me was even more concerning, given that I think it was 2 through 5. I think they got straight set wins at 1 and 6. They lost the doubles point, straight sets at 1 and 6, and then 2 through 5 all go 3. And they end up winning them. But to go 3 sets there, they need more. Obviously, they just need some more time to get into their groove. Again, you can't complain with 6-1 wins. So you take the wins, but you just wonder, or we wonder anyway, what's that mean when we start playing, instead of Alabama and Auburn, we start playing Tennessee and Texas A&M and Georgia, right?
Mm-hmm. No, I think that nailed it. Matty, anything you'd add?
Yeah, we just haven't seen the best of the Florida Gators. I mean, it's just not the team that we expected. Again, Florida's a team that we all unanimously had within our preseason top 10. All three of us thought that Florida was going to be a top 10 team, and they just haven't played up to that standard. I do think Lucas Greif should be a mainstay. We've talked about this. We don't need to reiterate it. You guys know how I feel. Lucas Greif should be in the lineup because he just wins. He does. Every single time he's going to put up a point and win. You know, Ingledson... Look, it may be time for him to focus on dubs a little bit. As much as I hate to say it, guys, he's not playing to the level that this team needs in the lower part of the lineup, right? And 4 through 6, that depth, they have other options. I mean, you've got Ben Shelton, you've got Blaze Bicknell, you've got Lucas Greif, Josh Goodyear. I mean, there's other players that I think are going to be able to come in and do just a little bit better. So I look for Florida still to make some changes with their lineup. That's going to be fluid. And they have just got to start just playing better. Overall, they have the talent. We know they can do it. It's a matter of time. And what's really going to be scary is if they start to find their groove come, you know, mid to end of April, as we go into the SEC tournament, as we go into the NCAAs, you know, in May, what if all of a sudden this team starts to click towards postseason time? They're going to be super dangerous. So I still have some belief that Florida will be able to turn some of these results around. And look, again, they won 6-1, right? We're nitpicking here at a 6-1 victory, but this is a team that we had high expectations for. And I just don't think we've seen that level of play yet, but I do believe it's still in there.
nitpicking at the Gators is a pastime for us here at the Great Shot Podcast, as many people know, because we have extraordinarily high expectations given the talent they have assembled on the roster. But yeah, I think you guys both nailed it there. Those were the two SEC matches I wanted to lock in on, although we'll get back to Texas A&M in a little bit. Let's switch gears now, talk about the Big Ten, and talk about Ohio State's weekend, because certainly the first impression the Buckeyes left us during this 2021 season was not a good one. They honestly didn't look particularly good against Middle Tennessee State, and then obviously they suffer the loss to Virginia on the kickoff weekend 4-2 as well, only their second loss in Columbus since 2005 or whatever it may be. They got tested twice this weekend on the schedule. They had Northwestern. They had Illinois. Now, the reason I bring up the Northwestern match, they won that match 4-0. They got doubles victories at the number 2 and 3 position from Trotter Boulé, Kingsley, and Selig. Although, Kashuk McNally took a loss that day. They also got a win from Kingsley at 1, McNally at 2, and then J.J. Tracy 0-1 at the number 5 position. Well, against Illinois, an Illinois team that had beaten USC at home, an Illinois team that had beaten Virginia at home without Kovacevic in their lineup, and we're facing the Buckeyes at home once again with a fully loaded deck, as Kovacevic was back from his futures event in Florida to play in this match. They still didn't have enough to overcome the Buckeyes. The Buckeyes flexing their muscles at the number 1 and 2 doubles position. That 2 doubles match in particular I'll get back to shortly, but they then take wins at the number 2 position from Cannon Kingsley, as it was McNally playing 1 singles. They then get a win from J.J. Tracy. I mentioned it was an 0-1 win for him against Northwestern. He beats Hunter Heck 1-2 at the number 5 position here in Champaign. And then it was Robert Cash, who I believe blew 6 match points. Maybe it was 7, but ultimately, I think actually got over the hump on that 7th match point as he knocked off Kouassi Kenyatta to clinch the 4-1 victory, the only win for the Illini. Kovacevic, a 6-4, 6-3 heated victory against John McNally, which we can get back to momentarily as well. I'll start with you, Chris, here on this one. Your thoughts on the, because, you know, you were all in on don't overreact to Illinois, guys. And of course you were right, so I have to mock you because you were correct. But your reaction here, does this win say more about Illinois or more about the Buckeyes?
I think Ohio State, Illinois is still a good team, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't think they were better than Ohio State, and I didn't think they were, you know, the number 3, 4, or 5 team, like maybe people wanted to put them up there.
You mean me? You can say me. Don't worry about it. I won't take it personally.
You, some dude on Twitter that was mocking me, my justification, all of you. But, you know, other than that, yeah, no, I think Illinois is still a good team, but it showed that, you know, Ohio State had played nobody since that Virginia match was going to be a test. And they're not going to get that many of them this year, frankly. So it was a big match for them to prove that, yeah, they're still the Ohio State that we expect to see. And that's what they did.
Maddie?
Yeah, I don't think anybody really wrote Ohio State off, right? I mean, we dropped them down in the rankings as they should have, which, you know, we always say is fluid. That can change every single week. I still had confidence in Ohio State that they were going to be a very, very good team, a contender, right? To go all the way at the end of the season. And this is a match where, you know, again, I think Zeke Clark, you know, courts 3 and 4 were the ones that were unfinished here. You know, I think there was a chance that possibly had those matches been played out, Illinois gets both of those, and this ends up being kind of a 4-3 type of deal. I think, you know, if you're Ohio State, you love the fact that Coach Tucker flipped McNally and Kingsley, because Kingsley just owned Alex Brown. Such a good matchup for him. And yeah, you lose the match at 1 to Kova. But again, think about it the other way, right? If Kova plays Kingsley, you know, does Kova possibly still win that? Like, he certainly could, right? Does McNally then maybe beat AB, you know, we don't know. So I think that was a genius coaching move by Ty Tucker, you know, to flip those two there, get the win for sure at number 2. And then whatever happens at 1, just let it go. They end up losing it. But obviously the depth, J.J. Tracy's been phenomenal so far. He's barely losing games. And yeah, that's, you know, when we've talked about Illinois this entire season, we've always questioned the depth a little bit. And you know, that's what happened here. So for me, I'm not surprised at the result. Ohio State takes doubles. Not a surprise, really. And then they get wins from Kingsley, Tracy, Cash. Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, so I'll go through this quickly because I was on the call for this match. And, you know, the doubles point, you know, Kovacevic and Banchila are really good at three. Banchila gets better and better, gets more comfortable with every repetition he gets, and Kovacevic is the best player in every number three doubles match he's probably going to play this season, and that includes, respectfully, teams such as UNC and Baylor. But, you know, so Illinois just outplayed Ohio State.
Even though they lost to Baylor.
Well, yeah, Illinois. You know what I'm saying. I'm saying Kovacevic. Okay.
Three dubs.
Anyways, you get what I'm saying. And then it came down, you know, that number two position was weird because Brown and Heck went up in early break. And Boulay and Trotter did not play a clean match, but they were the ones who got Brown and Heck on their back foot. They were able to get the late break. I think they won something like three games in a row in the middle of the set, or maybe it was four. Ultimately, they take this 6-4 victory. McNally, Cash just found the rhythm, got the one break of serve they needed to knock off Kenyatta and Monsi. But it says 4-1. It was about to be 4-2. Zeke Clark was 2 points away from closing out Justin Boulay at 4. Sifo Monsi, I believe, was up big on Kyle Selig in the second set before his lead sort of evaporated. But truth be told, Selig, I don't think, quite has his legs under him right now. And, you know, Monsi was certainly outplaying him at that three position. So this match was 20 minutes away from being a 4-3 decision. And yeah, you know, for Kovacevic, McNally, 4-5. So McNally, 3-4, love 40 on his serve, ends up holding for 4-all. Then 4-5, 15-40, it gets to a deuce point, a 30-40 point second serve. I thought the ball was wide. It looked a hair wide. Kovacevic called it wide. The chair umpire confirmed it wide. It was a second serve on the tee on the ad side that did just see, it didn't seem deep, but it did seem a hair wide. McNally did not agree. There was a lot of smack talk that ensued afterwards. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to get my hands on the footage yet. I'm trying to, but I do believe that ball just a hair wide. Anyways, that match is a toss-up as well. The lineup chicanery from Tucker is him at his finest. I love that he goes Kingsley-McNally against Northwestern, then goes McNally-Kingsley against Illinois, but yeah, Illinois played Ohio State really tough. They were right there, and you could see the emotion on Zeke Clark's face that they don't have control of their Big Ten destiny. It hurt him. You know, he felt that in the loss. That being said, this Illinois team is still really good, and you guys are right. It's just time to remember that, you know, we all have Ohio State as a top five team for a reason coming into the season. They flexed their muscles a little bit this weekend. J.J. Tracy's a stud at number five, and I'm telling you, he is not going to end the season there. He will end the season as the answer to the who's the other member of the top four question for Ohio State, unless Tucker can do the lineup chicanery that sometimes he's capable of. But like J.J. Tracy right now is that he belongs in the top four. It's in some order Kingsley McNally 1 and 2, then Selig Tracy, in my opinion, at 3 or 4. Am I crazy here, Matt?
No, I don't think you're crazy. For me, I probably wouldn't put him any higher than 4. Like 4, I would be okay with. I still think 1 through 3, let's probably leave that to Kingsley, McNally, and I would say Selig. Now, Kyle's got to play a little bit better. I know he will. So that would be my top 3. But yeah, if you want to put J.J. Tracy at 4, I'm good with it.
Yeah, and I can't get into specifics, but they've had some health issues. They've had some COVID protocol issues, just maneuvering all of it. Ty Tucker has not had his team on court nearly as long as he is accustomed to. But again, Buckeyes continue to find their rhythm. Two really good wins for them this weekend. I do want to talk quickly again. Two more matches, and then we'll get to the week ahead and our top 10 rankings. Let's go now to Texas A&M, who put together, you know, a pretty solid weekend of play. They get a 4-3 victory over UCF. A&M, I believe, getting wins. I must have X'd out of the tab. I will find it shortly. Give me a second here. We're live here, folks. I'm going to leave it all in Westhoff. But when you look at what Texas A&M was able to do, I believe they got this win. I can't find it on the website, Chris. I'm blaming you.
I got you, Gruskin. So
give me the rundown.
So A&M against UCF, this match was in Orlando. So it was a home match for UCF. A&M won the doubles. 2-3 in tiebreakers. It was a tight doubles point, and court one finished first. Gabriel DeCamps and Trey Hildebrand beat Bjorn Thompson and Carlos Aguilar 6-3. It came down to 2-3, and those matches could have gone either way. Super tight. Luckily for the Aggies, they were able to take both of those matches in tiebreakers. And at that point, you were like, man, I mean, that swing right there to take that doubles point was huge. But UCF came back. They were solid at the bottom of the lineup, but A&M was able to get wins at 2 from Habib, 3 from Aguilar, and 4 from Schachter to get the 4 points, 4-3.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about it there. It was a 3-set win for Aguilar, 6-1 in the third over Trey Hildebrand. He was a 6-7, 7-5, 6-1 win. So, again, that match very, very close to going the way of UCF. Now, if you're an Aggie fan, the thing you're encouraged about, Val Vacherot taking a 7-5, 6-4 loss to Gabriel DeCamps of UCF in this match against UCF. Now, he followed that up today with a very good result against Kentucky, and for A&M, it was wins at the number 1 and 2 doubles position, and then wins from Habib at 2, from Vacherot in straight sets at number 1 over Liam Draxel, and then Guido Marsan, Noah Schachter providing a couple of other victories in their 6-1 win over Kentucky. Chris, I'll give you the floor for the final word on A&M, but the concerning thing, they lose at 5-6, and the answer, it's, you know, Marson or Raphael Perreault. He continues to search for answers at the 5-6 positions if you're Coach Denton. But your top four, your doubles seem to be able to play at a really high level. Thompson and Aguilar haven't quite found their footing, but those are two guys with plenty of doubles pedigree. How are you feeling about the Aggies, given it feels like we haven't really seen them play much tennis here this season?
Yeah, I mean, I feel good, and I feel like their chances are really good in the SEC. But I kind of caught like you like to term teams or people, really individuals. Sometimes I'll do it on the team side, and I'll call A&M kind of like the 0.8 North Carolina, right? they're good at doubles, they're good at 1 through 4, and you just have no idea what you're going to get at 5-6, and with North Carolina, you have a little more idea of what you're getting at 5-6. But with A&M, that's the concern. You know your 1 through 4 are solid. You know you've got some good dubs, especially your 1 doubles team. It's just, what are you getting at 5 or 6? They seem to have settled in on Marson and Perreault.
Where's Barnaby Smith?
Yeah, well, this happened last year too. I don't think it's a health issue. I think it's just a playing thing.
I would try him, guys. I'm just telling you right now, Perreault, who's a freshman at 6, Marson hasn't showed all that great at 5. Look, if it's me, I'm going to at least throw Barnaby Smith in there. He's more experienced. Let's see what happens. And if he sucks, then you can go right back to it. But I think it's worth a shot.
Yeah, they were playing him earlier in the season.
Kickoff weekend.
Yeah, so I don't know there. But, yeah, I think they're yet to find the answer there, whether it's whether Barney comes back in, whether Pierce Rollins gets a shot. I'd be surprised if we saw it stay at Marson and Perreault the rest of the way out. And, again, today it was, you know, Kentucky's not the strongest at 5-6 either. They're a team that's a little stronger up top than they are down low. So, you know, it's going to be interesting for them. They're going to make their bread and butter is going to be the top four in doubles. And, you know, I think they would be, if you told them going into every match, they could split 5-6, they'd take it. They'd mm-hmm. say, sure, give us 1 and then we'll play the other 5 points and have to get, and just need to get 3 of those.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree with you guys. And again, for the Aggies, it's about getting reps now in the season. And I believe you'll see on their calendar, they are now playing a match against the Baylor Bears once again. I think that match is the first or second weekend of March. And so, you know, again, that will be a fun one to see them tested. I like that 0.8 North Carolina. That's a pretty good comparison there, Chris. With that in mind, let's move through the rest of the matches we saw here this weekend. You know, if you're a USC fan, that National Indoors was the weekend from hell. You know, nothing went right for the Trojans, and we had a lot of questions about their bottom of their lineup coming out of Champaign. But The good news for the Trojans, they answered some of those questions this weekend. They flexed their muscles. 4-0 victory over Oklahoma State. Wins at the number 1 and 2 doubles position, and then wins from Dostanich at 3, Fry at 5, Westrate at 6. So a great victory for the Trojans. Really nice victory for South Carolina, 5-2 over Alabama. They drop the doubles point, but then get wins at the 1, 2, 3, and 4 position. They also get a tiebreaker win at number 6 to close things out. I also have my match of the week, which, you know, Chris, if you want to try looking to guess for them, feel free to scroll through your website now. But Maddie, I'll start with you. Any other results, any other things that caught your eye from last week?
Not too much. NC State was able to rebound again, a team that we've talked about quite a bit. They had two home matches. They beat Louisville, and then they came back and beat, you know, Notre Dame, who we were talking about earlier in the podcast. So I think for them, you know, important to get back on the right track. They have a match upcoming a week from today, actually, against Baylor. Baylor's going to be coming to visit the Wolfpack at NC State. So that's obviously a huge match, but it was good to see them, you know, get back a little bit on track and get a couple home wins.
Chris, anything else?
Yeah, I think, well, so I have to bring up, you mentioned it on the other half of one of the USC matches. Really disappointed so far this year in Oklahoma State. I mean, that's a team that we thought was got a big upgrade.
Not just thought, you convinced me. I was like, yeah. Oh, I'm all in on Oklahoma State.
With Korsgaard coming in, and they played a really tight match, had to come from behind down 3-2 against Arkansas to win it. And Arkansas is, you know, frankly, one of the bottom three or four in the SEC. And then lost to Pepperdine. No big shocker. They lose 4-0 to USC. But I mean, for a team that was number 14 in the polls, not exactly what we expected to see. So that's been a little disappointing. And I will take a shot here, Gruskin. Whether it's your match or not, they deserve to be called out.
Oh, it's Liberty. Here it comes.
No.
Oh.
IUPUI 4-3 upset over SMU.
Yeah.
SMU comes into Indianapolis, plays the doubleheader at IUPUI and at Butler, and gets knocked off by IUPUI.
Look, the ooey pooeys can ball. There's no denying that. My match of the week, though, salute the boys. U.S. Air Force Academy, 4-3 over Nebraska Omaha. Way to go, boys. Great clinch by you. I'm going to guess at number 3 singles, Jonathan Mascagni, 7-6, 6-4 over Hugo Pillis of Nebraska Omaha. You know, for them to drop the doubles points, take 3, 4, 5, and 6, that's obviously a pretty nice effort. So that is my match of the week. Quickly now on the week ahead, I just want to talk about some of the things all of you college tennis fans can look forward to. I will say from a Crack Rackets perspective, we are going to be on the road this weekend in Columbus, calling Ohio State, Penn State for the men on Saturday, Ohio State, Michigan for the women on Sunday. Going to get some great interviews with all the players, coaches, some you know, I'll expect some Ohio State-centric content from us here at Crack Rackets over the next few days. I will probably dragoon Chris for a preview of those two matches as well. So, Chris, just some advanced homework I am telling you now live on the podcast. Don't you love that? When
love
I peer
it.
Pressure you on the pod to just say, hey, just so you know, I'm going to need you for some content. Anyways, thanks to your week ahead, which for some reason I just X'd out of, but I can pull up in the nick of time. We have some fantastic other matches for you this weekend in terms of, again, what you're going to see Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Mississippi State traveling to Tennessee on Friday. Virginia going to NC State on Friday. TCU taking on USC as well. I even think Ole Miss versus at Georgia should be a really fun one on Sunday. We're going to get a USC-UCLA part one. We're going to get the Mississippi State Bulldogs against Georgia. Should be a fun one as well between, I believe, is it South Carolina and LSU? Now that one will be too crazy. But, oh, no, that's what it is. It's the Tuesday match, Baylor going to NC State on Tuesday. I'll start with you, Chris, since, again, you can find all of these things on the College Tennis Ranks week ahead. Your thoughts on the week of upcoming matches?
Yeah, well, I love watching the, obviously, the SEC stuff, and they always play the, you know, you get the pairings. So this week, the pairing that is of most interest to me is Ole Miss and Mississippi State are the road teams. trading matches away at Tennessee and Georgia. So can, you know, can either one of those two schools in four matches, can they pull off one upset in there? That's the question. I think that's going to be, I would say, fair chance. Maybe one of them pulls an upset, and we'll have to see what the Georgia lineup looks like. But that's good. But outside of the SEC, that TCU USC match. I mean, come on,
the rematch.
Yeah. And this one's at USC. I sure hope, you know, I haven't checked, haven't gone out and checked their Twitter or anything to see that everything's still on. I sure hope that all of that is still planned as scheduled. But yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing that match. And next week, Gruskin, you'll definitely get to see some footage of some Liberty slappiness from me, because I'm making the visit there for a week to check out the new facility. They just did the grand opening. They had their first matches this weekend, dedicated it today. And then, of course, you know, get to spend some time with Trevor. But yeah, I'm going to get to see. I have not seen everything they've got going on there. So I'll get some good coverage there.
Your boy looked good in a suit. There's no denying that, Chris. He definitely did. But yeah, those are all fun matches. Look, I want to be clear. I'm very fond of Coach Roditi. Very fond of Coach Macy. I hope they have a good relationship as well. They're two of the funnier people in college tennis. If Coach Macy has a set of huevos on him, if they win the match, he'll do a post-match video in the theme of Coach David Roditi, where he goes, "What's up, Trojan Nation? You know, this is Coach Brett Macy. Great victory for us today over the Horned Frogs. Just come on. I need some pettiness.
TCU in the background, like well, holding the phone up.
It's a home match, right? That's the issue.
Yeah, no, that's what I said. He can't put like the logo there. He'd have to do it with the actual team behind him.
Yeah,
that, like with just, he would like, troll the team with Roditi right behind him. Like, hey, you know.
The good news is you can see Luke Famba. He's so tall, you can see him from 35 miles away. So maybe there's a world where he can get Famba in the background. But yeah, I just come on. Give me some rivalry. Give me some juice here. The rematch.
We need to have them do it together, right? Where they both do it, regardless of who wins. You know Roditi's going to do it whether they win or lose. He's got to find a way to bring in Macy in there, regardless of the result, and just do their recap together. I think that would be hilarious.
Yeah, I'm all in on that. I agree. Give me that content as fast as possible. With that in mind, some of our listeners' favorite piece of content, our Cracked Rackets top 10 rankings. We've got a bunch of results to adjust them with, so we are going to do that now. Chris, I will ask you to pull up the spreadsheet so you can give us the numbers at the end, and let's get into it. All right, gentlemen, we'll start as we always do. We'll go one all the way down. We're going to go through these kind of quickly, you know, not break them down with the usual depth that we do. I just want numbers for you. If you want to say a sentence as well, go for it. I think we can all agree top two still, UNC Baylor.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
All right. So now we get to number three. I think it's impossible to deny Tennessee at this point, just given their record, given, you know, the only team to knock them off is UNC. I have Tennessee number three. Maddie?
I do, too. I had Tennessee number three last week, so there's no change for me there.
Chris?
Yep, same.
All right. Next, I have UVA number four. Maddie?
I do as well. Same thing. No change for me from last week.
Chris?
Same here.
All right, this is where I think things will start to get interesting. Five, I'm going to stick with the Horned Frogs. I'm going to go TCU. The win over Baylor is still so impressive. They're a top five team in my books.
Yeah, I had it last week as well. TCU at number five, no change from me.
Same here.
Oh, okay. That's very fun. All right, number six. Might be a bit of an overreaction, but I'm going to put the Buckeyes back at number six. I think that's a really good win on the road at Illinois. I think obviously the win over Northwestern as well, pretty impressive. I'm going to put them at six. Maddie, you shook your head.
Yeah, I'm not. So I am going to make a change here. I had Illinois at number six, and now I've got Texas A&M at number six for me this week. I have the Aggies in that sixth spot for me.
Interesting. Chris?
I have Ohio State at number six.
Oh, that makes me upset.
Something's got to happen here, Gruskin. We cannot have the same top 10.
Well, I should have stuck with my original team, but I made a late switch. I have Texas at number seven. I feel like this is where we might diverge. And I see from your body language that we do. Maddie, you guys know my thoughts. This Texas team is never going to lose a match again. But your thoughts, Maddie?
Yeah, no, I agree. I have Texas at number seven as well on my board. So I moved them up a little. I basically what I did, I pulled Illinois out of here. I moved A&M and Texas up. So I've got A&M at six, Texas at seven. I agree.
Yeah. Okay, Chris.
I have A&M at seven.
All right. I have A&M in my top 10, but not yet, though. I have Illinois at eight. I can't penalize them for losing a close match. That would have been 4-3 had everything finished to Ohio State. They still have really good wins over Virginia, over USC. You know, it's an indoor team for now. We need to see how they do outside, but I have Illinois at eight. Maddie?
I have Ohio State. I have the Buckeyes, who I didn't have in my top 10 last week. I have them entering back into the fold here with the win over Illinois. Ohio State at number eight for me.
It's reasonable. Chris?
I have Illinois at eight.
All right. I like it. Number nine for me, this is where the missing piece is filled in. This is where I have the Aggies. So A&M for me, number nine. Good win over UCF. Good win over Kentucky. Still don't have a great win. That's why they're nine for me.
I've got Illinois at nine. So I'm dropping them. I had them at six and I dropped them back to nine behind Ohio State due to that loss.
Totally fair. Chris?
So what, I missed something here, Maddie. You have Texas at six or seven?
I have A&M at six.
Texas, oh, that's what I missed.
Texas A&M at six, seven.
Texas at seven.
Ohio State eight, Illinois nine.
Leave it all in, by the way, Westoff.
Got it. Yeah, I'm trying to do both at the same time. So I had. So where are we up to for me?
You're nine. Number nine.
My nine is Texas.
Okay, so we have the same nine teams, all of us, just slightly different order. And I think unanimously I'm going to guess for number 10 because no Stanford. Maybe you have Florida. Maybe you have Michigan. But I think we're all going to agree USC number 10.
Yep.
Yep, that's what I have there. Who did you have at nine, Gruskin?
I had A&M at nine.
Ah, got it.
Yeah, so again, same 10 teams for all of us. There's no outliers. Stanford not qualifying because they haven't played. Michigan, Florida, Georgia, NC State, Wake Forest on the outside looking in right now. Chris, let me know when you've got the numbers ready and let us know what our Crack Rackets top 10 poll looks like.
All right, here we go, Gruskin. The rankings at, we'll go bottom up. Number 10, USC. Number 9, Illinois. Number 8, Texas. Number 7, Texas A&M. Number 6, Ohio State. Number 5, TCU. 4, Virginia. 3, Tennessee. 2, Baylor. And 1, North Carolina.
Feels about right, gentlemen. Feels about right.
Pretty close. Yeah. I mean, we all had the same 10 teams, just slightly different orders. And it's hard to pick the order. You know, it really is because, you know, we're trying to see, okay, head to head, who beat who and, you know, whose wins are better. So I just think the fact that we had all the same 10 teams, we're pretty much in agreement here. You know, the order is pretty close.
Yeah, which is always a dangerous thing. But of course, again, a lot of fun college tennis action to unfold this weekend. We will be back next week breaking all of it down again here on this Great Shot podcast as well. If you are interested in checking out our broadcast this weekend in Columbus, be sure to go check out our website, crackedrackets.com. We will be blasting you all on social media as well. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, you know the deal by now. We are at Cracked Rackets. You need those more immediate updates, be sure to follow as well. You want to DM me directly. I am at Great Shot Pod. Shout out as always to the super producers, Max Fligner and Daniel Westhoff, for the of an any job they do day in, day out. Shout out as well to our friends at DraftKings. Go to dkng.co/cracked open to play along with us. And of course, follow our picks each and every day on our GSP Aces of the Day segment. With that in mind, Maddie, I'll start with you. Any final thoughts?
I don't think so, guys. Looking forward to another weekend here and especially next week. So Baylor's going to be coming out my way. They're at NC State and at Wake Forest. So hoping to be in attendance for those matches and see some good tennis. But yeah, before that, man, we got a huge weekend. So should be fun.
Chris?
And my final shout out, Gruskin, as much as it pains me to do this, is do to it. You.
Oh.
For those that didn't get to hear, Gruskin was on the call at Illinois. He's going to be doing, I think, some more of that. So we're going to get to hear more of him. And so shout out to Gruskin grabbing the Illinois broadcast and doing a little mentoring with a Big Ten guy along the way. It was definitely a good deal and good to see more broadcasting going on.
That's very kind of you to say. Well, I have one shout out as well. Does she go by Mrs. Halioris? I don't think that's correct. Is it correct?
I think you could just say Chrissy.
Yeah, I didn't want to be so formal, but she won't.
I mean, assuming you're not referring to my dead mother.
Yes, no. I love her too. But no, I look, it's stupid. We again take more of Chris's time. I do in particular than I have any right doing. It's one thing, you know, Trevor's actually related to him. Like, you know, I am through spirit, but not actually, but shout out to Chrissy, whose birthday is on Friday. If she is listening till hour, you know, minute number six of hour number two, then shout out to her as well. But happy birthday to her this Friday. Thank you for putting up with all of our garbage as well. She absolutely deserves a shout out. We joke about Nick being Matt's other half. Chrissy certainly the better half of the Chris Halioris.
No
Chrissy
doubt about
duo.
That.
Yes. So shout out to her. Happy birthday. But with that in mind, for my wonderful podcast co-host, Matt Stachowiak, Chris Halioris, our super producers, Fliegner and Westhoff, our friends at DraftKings, and all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I am your host, Alex Gruskin. Gentlemen, what do we tell our listeners?
Hey.
Hey.
Great shot.
And we will see you all next time. Thanks, everyone.